Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Prepared to take the oath, Senator?
I am.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear
that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully.
That I will execute
the office of President of the United States faithfully. And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
He waves to the crowd from the balcony of the west front of the Capitol. His daughters Sasha and Malia waving too. His wife Michelle Obama is there, and an enormous crowd in front of him on the National Mall cheers and waves flags, the 21-gun salute. The first ever oath administered by Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, and ABC's Vic Ratner had a little bit of trouble.
And he muffled it a bit. That oath is traditional. It is included in the Constitution. It's not supposed to be changed. The Supreme Court justice seemed to have forgotten a word or two.
Barack Obama, now the President of the United States, preparing to deliver his inaugural address, an address that he is said to have penned by himself. You can hear the sound of the crowd.
It is my great personal honor to present the 44th President of these United States, Barack Obama.
An enormous cheer roaring from the National Mall here in the nation's capital as President Barack Obama takes the podium to deliver his inaugural address. His lips are closed. He gave a small wave to the crowd, which is now chanting Obama. He says thank you. And he gives a small wave, clearly wants to begin. This crowd may not let him for a while.
My fellow citizens, I stand here today humbled by the task before us, grateful for the trust you have bestowed, mindful of the sacrifices borne by our ancestors. I thank President Bush for his service to our nation. As well as the generosity and cooperation he has shown throughout this transition. 44 Americans have now taken the presidential oath. The words have been spoken during rising tides of prosperity and the still waters of peace. Yet, every so often, the oath is taken amidst gathering clouds and raging storms. At these moments, America has carried on not simply because of the skill or vision of those in high office, but because we, the people, have remained faithful to the ideals of our forebears and true to our founding documents. So it has been, so it must be with this generation of Americans. That we are in the midst of crisis is now well understood. Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some, but also our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age. Homes have been lost, jobs shed, businesses shuttered. Our health care is too costly, our schools fail too many, And each day brings further evidence that the ways we use energy strengthen our adversaries and threaten our planet. These are the indicators of crisis, subject to data and statistics. Less measurable, but no less profound, is a sapping of confidence across our land. A nagging fear that America's decline is inevitable, that the next generation must lower its sights. Today, I say to you that the challenges we face are real. They are serious and they are many. They will not be met easily or in a short span of time. But know this, America, they will be met. On this day, we gather because we have chosen hope over fear, unity of purpose over conflict and discord. On this day, we come to proclaim an end to the petty grievances and false promises, the recriminations and worn-out dogmas that for far too long have strangled our politics. We remain a young nation, but in the words of Scripture, the time has come to set aside childish things. The time has come to reaffirm our enduring spirit, to choose our better history, to carry forward that precious gift, that noble idea passed on from generation to generation, the God-given promise that all are equal, all are free, and all deserve a chance to pursue their full measure of happiness. In reaffirming the greatness of our nation, we understand that greatness is never a given. It must be earned. Our journey has never been one of shortcuts or settling for less. It has not been the path for the faint-hearted, for those who prefer leisure over work or seek only the pleasures of riches and fame. Rather, it has been the risk-takers, the doers, the makers of things, some celebrated, but more often men and women obscure in their labor, who have carried us up the long, rugged path towards prosperity and freedom. For us, they packed up their few worldly possessions and traveled across oceans in search of a new life. For us, they toiled in sweatshops and settled the West, endured the lash of the whip, and plowed the hard earth. For us, they fought and died in places like Concord and Gettysburg, Normandy and Quezon. Time and again, these men and women struggled and sacrificed and worked till their hands were raw so that we might live a better life. They saw America as bigger than the sum of our individual ambitions, greater than all the differences of birth or wealth or faction. This is the journey we continue today. We remain the most prosperous, powerful nation on earth. Our workers are no less productive than when this crisis began. Our minds are no less inventive, our goods and services no less needed than they were last week or last month or last year. Our capacity remains undiminished, but our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America. For everywhere we look, there is work to be done. The state of our economy calls for action, bold and swift, and we will act, not only to create new jobs, but to lay a new foundation for growth. We will build the roads and bridges, the electric grids and digital lines that feed our commerce and bind us together. We will restore science to its rightful place and wield technology's wonders to raise healthcare's quality and lower its cost. We will harness the sun and the winds and the soil to fuel our cars and run our factories, and we will transform our schools and colleges and universities to meet the demands of a new age. All this we can do. All this we will do. Now, There are some who question the scale of our ambitions, who suggest that our system cannot tolerate too many big plans. Their memories are short, for they have forgotten what this country has already done, what free men and women can achieve when imagination is joined to common purpose and necessity to courage. What the cynics fail to understand is that the ground has shifted beneath them, that the stale political arguments that have consumed us for so long no longer apply. The question we ask today is not whether our government is too big or too small, but whether it works, whether it helps families find jobs at a decent wage, care they can afford, a retirement that is dignified. Where the answer is yes, we intend to move forward. Where the answer is no, programs will end. And those of us who manage the public's dollars will be held to account to spend wisely, reform bad habits, and do our business in the light of day, because only then can we restore the vital trust between a people and their government. Nor is the question before us whether the market is a force for good or ill. Its power to generate wealth and expand freedom is unmatched. But this crisis has reminded us that without a watchful eye, the market can spin out of control. The nation cannot prosper long when it favors only the prosperous. The success of our economy has always depended not just on the size of our gross domestic product, but on the reach of our prosperity, on the ability to extend opportunity to every willing heart. Not out of charity, but because it is the surest route to our common good. As for our common defense, we reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals. Our founding fathers, faced with perils that we can scarcely imagine, drafted a charter to assure the rule of law and the rights of man, a charter expanded by the blood of generations. Those ideals still light the world, and we will not give them up for expedience's sake. And so, to all the other peoples and governments who are watching today, from the grandest capitals to the small village where my father was born, know that America is a friend of each nation and every man, woman, and child who seeks a future of peace and dignity, and we are ready to lead once more. Recall that earlier generations faced down fascism and communism not just with missiles and tanks, but with the sturdy alliances and enduring convictions. They understood that our power alone cannot protect us, nor does it entitle us to do as we please. Instead, they knew that our power grows through its prudent use. Our security emanates from the justness of our cause, the force of our example, the tempering qualities of humility and restraint. We are the keepers of this legacy. Guided by these principles once more, we can meet those new threats that demand even greater effort, even greater cooperation and understanding between nations. We will begin to responsibly leave Iraq to its people and forge a hard-earned peace in Afghanistan. With old friends and former foes, we will work tirelessly to lessen the nuclear threat and roll back the specter of a warming planet. We will not apologize for our way of life, nor will we waver in its defense. And for those who seek to advance their aims by inducing terror and slaughtering innocents, we say to you now that our spirit is stronger and cannot be broken. You cannot outlast us, and we will defeat you. For we know that our patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers. We are shaped by every language and culture, drawn from every end of this earth, and because we have tasted the bitter swill of civil war and segregation and emerged from that dark chapter stronger and more united, we cannot help but believe that the old hatreds shall someday pass, that the lines of tribe shall soon dissolve, that as the world grows smaller, our common humanity shall reveal itself, and that America must play its role in ushering in a new era of peace. To the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward based on mutual interest and mutual respect. To those leaders around the globe who seek to sow conflict or blame their society's ills on the West, know that your people will judge you on what you can build, not what you destroy. To those who cling to power through corruption and deceit and the silencing of dissent, know that you are on the wrong side of history, but that we will extend a hand if you are willing to unclench your fist. To the people of poor nations, we pledge to work alongside you to make your farms flourish and let clean waters flow, to nourish starved bodies and feed hungry minds. And to those nations like ours that enjoy relative plenty, we say we can no longer afford indifference to the suffering outside our borders, nor can we consume the world's resources without regard to effect. For the world has changed, and we must change with it. As we consider the road that unfolds before us, we remember with humble gratitude those brave Americans who, at this very hour, patrol far-off deserts and distant mountains. They have something to tell us, just as the fallen heroes who lie in Arlington whisper through the ages. We honor them not only because they are the guardians of our liberty, but because they embody the spirit of service, a willingness to find meaning in something greater than themselves. And yet, at this moment, a moment that will define a generation, it is precisely this spirit that must inhabit us all. For as much as government can do and must do, it is ultimately the faith and determination of the American people upon which this nation relies. It is the kindness to take in a stranger when the levees break, the selflessness of workers who would rather cut their hours than see a friend lose their job, which sees us through our darkest hours. It is the firefighter's courage to storm a stairway filled with smoke, but also a parent's willingness to nurture a child that finally decides our fate. Our challenges may be new. The instruments with which we meet them may be new. But those values upon which our success depends, honesty and hard work, courage and fair play, tolerance and curiosity, loyalty and patriotism, these things are old. These things are true. They have been the quiet force of progress throughout our history. What is demanded then is a return to these truths. What is required of us now is a new era of responsibility, a recognition on the part of every American that we have duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world, duties that we do not grudgingly accept, but rather seize gladly, firm in the knowledge that there is nothing so satisfying to the spirit, so defining of our character, than giving our all to a difficult task. This is the price and the promise of citizenship. This is the source of our confidence, the knowledge that God calls on us to shape an uncertain destiny. This is the meaning of our liberty and our creed, why men and women and children of every race and every faith can join in celebration across this magnificent mall, and why a man whose father less than 60 years ago might not have been served in a local restaurant can now stand before you to take a most sacred oath. So let us mark this day with remembrance. of who we are and how far we have traveled. In the year of America's birth, in the coldest of months, a small band of patriots huddled by dying campfires on the shores of an icy river. The Capitol was abandoned. The enemy was advancing. The snow was stained with blood. In a moment when the outcome of our revolution was most in doubt, the father of our nation ordered these words be read to the people. Let it be told to the future world that in the depth of winter, when nothing but hope and virtue could survive, that the city and the country, alarmed at one common danger, came forth to meet it. America, in the face of our common dangers, in this winter of our hardship, let us remember these timeless words. With hope and virtue, let us brave once more the icy currents and endure what storms may come. Let it be said by our children's children that when we were tested, we refused to let this journey end, that we did not turn back, nor did we falter. And with eyes fixed on the horizon and God's grace upon us, we carried forth that great gift of freedom and delivered it safely to future generations. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
This is Ron Reagan. You're listening to coverage of the inauguration of the 44th President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama. An extraordinary morning here in Washington, D.C. I'm coming to you live from KPTK in Seattle, Washington. I wish I was in the other Washington. It's just that sort of a day. You wanted to be there, but it was great to see it on the television, too. A cold day, but that didn't stop the crowds. I'm not sure what the final number is, but there were a lot of people out there stretching 20 blocks distance from the dais where the ceremony was taking place. I'm sure that the numbers are in the, perhaps the millions there. It was quite a ceremony. It's always quite a ceremony. This is an extraordinary moment in history, and we are all fortunate to be witness to it. Joining me now, Tom Hartman.
Hey, Ron.
Hey there, Tom. You were right in the thick of it, weren't you? I'm so jealous of you because you got to be there.
I am sitting 30 paces from Barack Obama and George Bush. We're at the same level where the inauguration is. In fact, I'm probably just 10 paces or so away from, or 15 maybe, Joe Biden. The press stand here, right? But Talk Radio News just got us an amazing spot.
Yeah, boy, I'm watching this. I'm looking at a television screen now just to kind of picture where you are. You're right up there, aren't you?
We are. If you're looking at it on TV, there's a press stand to the right and a press stand to the left. We're at the one on the left side of your TV.
Right.
What would be to the speaker's right, standing at the podium, and. Well, I'm not going to stand up and wave up right now.
Yeah, can you wave a flag or something? Air America flag?
Yeah, we're right next to Voice of America, and a fellow sitting right next to me is broadcasting on for Irish National Radio.
Who is the Reverend giving the prayer right now? Is that Reverend
I've
Lowry?
Forgotten his name. I'm sorry. Oh, is that Joseph Lowry?
I'm not sure. I don't recognize him on sight, so I'm not sure it is.
I believe that I think that was, you know, that's the bracket. Rick Warren, and as I recall, it was Joseph Lowry.
Yeah, that's when I had.
But what was particularly interesting, George Bush is sitting just, you know, 50 feet, 60, maybe 80 feet from me. And watching, as much as I was watching Barack Obama give the speech, I was watching George Bush's reaction to it.
Yeah.
And Dick Cheney and some of the others around him. And he was not applauding on some of the applaud lines. And he kind of was alternating between this look of boredom and disdain on his face. I don't know how many times I don't have a TV here, so it'll be interesting to see if if the TV folks, you know, did any close-ups on him.
There were a few. I noticed the same thing. That's a common look for George W. Bush, and we don't want to spend the whole day dumping on George Bush because it isn't his day.
That's absolutely. It's a good time to just leave it behind.
but you're right. He did have that kind of disdainful smirk on his face.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's worth mentioning there was and you may or may not have been aware of this where you were, but as Bush arrived at the Capitol, he was met by boos. And chants of hey, 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 goodbye,
wow.
Which many people would consider bad form, you know, on a day like today. That you whatever you're feeling, you know, you kind of keep it to yourself and you keep your powder dry, as it were. But there was some pretty obvious booing going on.
Yeah, from where I am, we're right here at the top of the Capitol, and I'm looking down all the way to the Washington Monument. It's just a giant sea of people, millions of people, and they've got these giant jumbotrons about every, 1,000 yards or so, or 500 yards. And when Bush was introduced, of course, the voice, you could hear it echo all the way down to the Washington Monument, you know, President Bush. And then there was this noise that came from the far distant, not so many people locally, you know, mm-hmm. right here in this area. In fact, they basically didn't do much of anything. Nobody applauded. Nobody did much of anything other than the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this roar from down there, and I thought, are they booing or applauding? Because I thought it's got to be booing, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I couldn't quite make it out here, you know.
No, I think it was booing.
Yeah.
And then there was the odd the picture of Dick Cheney being wheeled in. You know, in his wheelchair, having hurt his back, you know, apparently moving waterboards or something
and
out of his residence.
Yeah, sitting there with his black hat.
Yes, kind of scowling and grumpy with his cane. And what a metaphor for this administration, I thought.
Oh, it's
incredible. This sort of, temporarily crippled man.
Just an incredible time. I've got a couple of kind of metaphor stories, too, of my way here. But I'm curious, Ron, you've, you know, like Sasha and Malia were up there on I wonder what it was like when your dad was inaugurated and the sense, your sense of this transition as compared to others in our history.
Well, it's an extraordinary thing. I mean, the entire day, really, we've, you know, of course, mentioned the obvious, which is that it's a peaceful transition of power, which is not a given, you know, in various parts of the world. So that alone is a remarkable thing and worth feeling good about, I suppose. But on a personal level and a political level, it's a remarkable thing, and there is definitely tension in the air. I remember when my father was first inaugurated, and of course Jimmy Carter was there on the dais with him and Rosalind Carter, and they did not feel good about the fact that they had been turned out of the White House, and they were not happy people on that day, and you could tell that, and you could feel for them.
Yeah.
You know, there's the moment where the whole transition where the president, incoming president, goes to the White House and meets the outgoing president. And even though in this case, George W. Bush is, of course, served out his 8 years, couldn't have been reelected. Nevertheless, given the circumstances surrounding this inauguration, there is still that feeling of almost defeat for George W. Bush. He's leaving office disgraced and unpopular, and the new man coming in is as popular as any incoming president has ever been.
Yeah.
George Bush has got to be aware of that on some level, as insulated from reality as he may be. He certainly got a taste of it when he walked into the Capitol and was booed by people.
Now, tell me about that, because I didn't see that on this. Was that showing on TV?
Yes. You saw him. They were following everybody as they were coming in. You know, Joe mm-hmm. Biden and the wives and various dignitaries and all. And the cameras would follow them down a hallway. It's in the Capitol. I'm not sure exactly, you know, where. I don't have my geography down that well. But as George Bush kind of came into view, into the camera's view, you heard people beginning to boo, and it was audible. It was loud, and then they started with the chant, the hey, 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 goodbye, and then no more Bush, no more Bush. And you saw it register on his face. You know, that this is, you know, he's leaving now, he's gone, and yet people do not feel kindly disposed towards this administration or this individual. And it's a tricky thing. We then saw, of course, the more prosaic elements of the transition, which is the van moving up. And most of the Bush's artifacts and belongings had been moved out sometime before, which is a little unusual. Usually it happens on the day at about 20 to 12. When they've left the White House, the incoming and outgoing president have left the White House, immediately the movers start doing their thing. They've choreographed it. They've practiced it. Bush, I have to say, made it easier for them because he, ahead of time, got a lot of his stuff out. But you saw the van pulled up there, an unmarked van and boxes coming out. It's all the Obama's belongings, you know. Yeah. Toys for Malia and Sasha. Family photos will be in place. When they walk into the White House after this ceremony, their family photos will be arranged the way they want them to. The Oval Office will be set up the way President Obama wants it to be, with the portraits of former presidents on the walls. All of this is going on right now, even as we speak. The White House is a whirlwind of activity right now.
This is hit the ground running time.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Because when he walks back into that White House, well, in fact, at this moment, but when he walks back in, he is the president of the United States. The weight of the world is on his shoulders.
Right.
And I tell you, I have to assume that President Bush, or former President Bush, is relieved at this point. I think that he was ready to go. We saw that weeks ago, at least, months ago, maybe even.
Yeah.
Perhaps
years ago.
Yes. Well, we could hope.
I really think after his whatever you call it, victory in 2004, that he was very ambivalent.
Yes.
You know, he wanted the win, but then he didn't want the work.
Yes, yes. Well, that's sort of the story of his life, I suppose.
Yeah.
There was an odd moment, too, and you were probably... you were closer than I was, certainly. The oath of office that Obama took, my thought was, with John Roberts there, Chief Justice John Roberts, don't they practice this thing? How did John Roberts manage to screw that up?
Did he? I heard a line get repeated, but that was the one thing that wasn't mic'd for the crowd here. I couldn't quite hear what they were saying. Everybody else was right in front of the microphone on the lectern, you know. But
yeah.
but even Joe Biden's was mic'd for some reason, but his wasn't. And thus, only the last half of it. Somehow they got the mics up, and the last half of it was heard by the crowd out on the
Well, it was probably just as well because they sort of flubbed the beginning.
Wow.
Roberts read too much. Obama obviously thought that he was going to do it a little bit differently, and.
Yeah.
And he kind of reversed some of the words and everything. It was like, come on, it's
amazing.
Written right there. It's only 34 words.
Amazing. Yeah, in fact, it's written right there in the Constitution.
Exactly.
we're gonna take a break here. Ron Reagan, and thank you, Ron, for spending these 2 hours with us and co-anchoring my show here, our show today.
Absolutely.
Here on Air America Radio. I am broadcasting live from the Capitol building as the senators are leaving, as the president now, no longer president-elect, the president of the United States and vice president and others are leaving. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized a contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code BLUE to get a free trial and a free retractable VoIP headset, too. Remember that code, BLUE, to qualify for the free VoIP headset. WebEx, now part of Cisco, used by over 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try, free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code BLUE, WEBEX.com. Free headsets available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
She's loud. She's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhoads.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout? I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself, so there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhoads Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country,
3 to 6,
you are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ
and 620KPOJ.com.
It's hard to talk to your kids about the S word because they're too young to think about bedroom activities. So you try to limit their exposure to adult behavior. But let's be honest, there's birds and bees stuff all over the place. On TV, 64% of programs include, you know, the internet's even worse. 42% of kids between 10 and 17 have inadvertently seen, well, funny business online. It's everywhere.
We know that S-word makes you uncomfortable. It's embarrassing. But you've got to be the parent. You've got to talk to us about sex. Because everyone else is, and they're not talking about waiting. That part's up to you. You don't have to be explicit about it. You don't have to talk about the parts. Just tell us how you feel. Tell us what to do. Tell us you want us to wait to do that stuff. For help starting the conversation, visit forparents.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master?
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the karate glove. And I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
Chop wood, concrete, trees. It can even chop through these 8 guitars.
Hi-ya! Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
My name is Dee Dee Williams. I'm one of thousands of disabled Oregonians, and I have a message for you. Drivers with disabilities don't want your pity. We just want our parking. When you're looking for a parking space and see an open one with a familiar blue sign, please don't park there unless you have a permit. It's just wrong. It's also illegal and could get you a hefty fine and a tow. I depend on those spots so I can go about my everyday life, just like you. When I don't have access to those spots, it takes me much more time and energy to get things done. And for me, having to cross the parking lot could put my safety at risk, and possibly yours too. You don't need to pity me, but when you see the blue sign, please stay out of that disabled parking space if you're not disabled.
It's simple, really. No permit, no parking. This message brought to you by the Northwest ADA and Information Technology Center at OHSU. On the web at nwada.org.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
One, two, three, four.
Yeah. I just want to celebrate.
We are watching another ceremony that takes place after these inaugurations, and this is, I believe, we see Dick Cheney. I'm watching the television now. Dick Cheney is being wheeled back to his limousine, but this is where the new and the old president part, Tom.
Wheeled away.
Wheel away the vice president.
Except for some reason, the image of Hannibal Lecter on that, what do they call those
on
things?
On a dolly with a mask. Yeah.
Just came to mind. By the way, our number 866-303-2270, and we'd be glad to take your calls and thoughts on this. It's a historic moment. I don't have the transcript of the speech. In fact, I'm just sitting out here all by myself with an ISDN box in the cold. Not all by myself, but I mean, it's no computers. Greetings to the folks in our chat room. I can't get in there. I can't. We don't have the call screening software here, so. Shelley will probably be shouting out who's on the phone. we're gonna wing it. Ron Reagan and Tom Hartman here with you, and Ron, I just have to tell you this incredible story. I was actually two of them. We had to go through the Rayburn Building, the press. There was this long line down in the basement of the Rayburn Building for the press security, you know. And it was maybe 150, 200 people on the line, and we'd been standing there for like an hour. And, you know, mostly kind of crusty old hard-bitten print reporters. And, you know, it was it wasn't, you know, political rally folks or anything like that. I mean, this is the press. And a lot of technicians and whatnot, you know, heading to the same place where I am, you know, all the various press gatherers. And in this kind of echoing, cavernous, marble, underground basement, long, long hallway. And somebody started singing We Shall Overcome. And within a minute or two, I'd say at least a third of the people in that line were singing. It was wow. like... It was like a choir, you know. It was like a chorus. It was incredible, and they sang like three verses of the thing, and just over and over and over again, and I don't think even 5% of the group was African American, and still it was, you know, We Shall Overcome. It's like the politics of it. This so far transcends race.
Your turn. We see President Bush now getting onto the presidential helicopter, Marine One. This will be his final ride on Marine One, unless he, you know, is invited up to Camp David some weekend with the current president. But this is all part of the ceremony. I remember my father doing this when he handed the reins of power, as it were, to George H.W. Bush back in 1989. And for the outgoing president, it really is a bittersweet sort of moment. I don't know exactly how President Bush is feeling, and I mentioned before that I think he's probably relieved to just be out of out of the line of fire, as it were. But for 8 years, you've had a big chunk of your life. You've been the most important person on the planet, and everybody's telling you that every day. And now, all of a sudden, you're not, and another guy has taken your place, and it's over just like that. Just in a snap of a finger, that's it. The transition is made, and everything changes for you. And everything will change for Obama now, too. Yeah. I mean, he's been building up to it, of course, but he's now in the hot seat. And his life will never be the same. And his life of his members of his family will never be the same after this.
Shelley, I understand we have some folks on the line. Who's on the line with us?
Paul in California is on the line. He looks like he's got a good comment, Tom.
Okay, Paul in California. You're on with Tom and Ron.
Oh, hey, how you doing, Tom? This is great. I just wanted to say a couple quick things here so I don't dominate the conversation. But my father, who is still alive, is a Pearl Harbor survivor. He had the pleasure of serving under Franklin Roosevelt, and he is really happy about this, hoping that Barack, as well as me and my immediate family, is the next Roosevelt-like leader we have. And the other thing is my mother passed away 6 years ago of cancer, but she would have been ecstatic on this day. She organized Steel City in Athens, Tennessee in 1970, just a couple of years after Dr. King was killed. Mm-hmm. And so that was a multicultural effort right there. So this is all really good, and that's essentially what I had to say today, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the call and your sentiments. Ron, I'm at a loss. I don't know.
Well, this is just one of those big moments in history. I mean, you almost don't know what to say because there's a grandeur to this. There's a pomp, there's ceremony, of course, but without royalty, without any regal trappings here. There nobody is being crowned king. Nobody is claiming the mandate of heaven here. This is just an exercise in democracy. And it's how we do it, and I'd say we do it pretty well, actually.
Yeah, something's going on. The crowd around me has just gone nuts.
Well, that's because Marine One is just taking off.
Oh, it's Marine One taking off.
Yeah, Marine One is lifted off, carrying former President Bush away.
I just saw a bunch of people. We had a guy call in a while ago. So he had this website, fingersalutetobush.org. And I just saw a bunch of people giving the finger to the helicopter. I'm not kidding. I mean,
I believe you. I believe you. You kind of, I understand it, of course. And inside some corner of our souls, we feel the same way, of course. But you kind of hate to see it on a day like today because you want this to be dignified.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, just keep it to yourself for now.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. It was unexpected, actually.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby.
This is Tom Hartman, better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from the Capitol Building here in Washington, D.C., where the clouds have now come in. The sun has gone away. It's gotten much colder. And I am grateful for my prescient wife who picked up some long underwear before I left. And LaVisa Frost from Talk Radio News Service, who had the foresight to bring some foot warmers. And Ron Reagan with us for this
hour.
Very
important, those foot warmers.
Oh, man.
I guess it's somewhere in the 20s back there today is what I'm hearing. That's what you're experiencing.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way, yeah.
Not the coldest inauguration ever. I'm not sure what the coldest was, but I know back in 84 it was in the low teens, I believe, and they actually had to cancel the parade. It was so cold. And they moved the ceremony indoors into the rotunda of the Capitol.
Yeah.
They were afraid that the brass bands and the high school bands and all would be in the parade, that the trumpets would freeze to the lips of the trumpeters. It was so cold.
Yeah.
So they were a little disappointed, the youngsters that were going to march in the parade. But, you know, safety dictated that they
were canceled. sitting here looking down on the band. I don't know what it's called. What is it, the Marine Band or the?
There's a Marine Band, yeah.
Whichever band it was that was playing for the inauguration, and they all had white gloves.
Well, I was amazed by the beautiful. I think it was called "Air and Simple Gifts," the John Williams arrangement. Itzhak Perlman, Yo-Yo Ma, mm-hmm. Anthony McGill, and Gabriel Montero. And I was amazed at Yo-Yo Ma, Itzhak Perlman, and McGill also playing without gloves. I mean, can you imagine playing a violin in weather like this with no gloves?
Wow. Yeah.
But it sounded beautiful.
Of course, you couldn't play a violin with gloves.
That's true.
I played the violin for a year, badly, when I was like 11 years old.
Yeah.
And, But
Barack Obama has now, just to keep you up to date, because I know you can't see what's going on, and I've got a television monitor here, he has gone back into the Capitol. There is a little official business that takes place where he signs some documents. I noted that he was left-handed. I hadn't really noticed that before. And now he's moved on to the lunch. There will be a lunch in the Capitol there. This is traditional. Many of course, members of Congress and the Senate and all, and dignitaries will be there. And after that, he'll go to the parade. And after that, well, there'll be some balls and things. But eventually, he's going to wind his way back to the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be home for the next 4 to 8 years.
Yeah. And I will be at a ball, one of the balls tonight, and that's all worked out. We did yesterday. I was talking on the air about how I didn't have my press credentials because it had been tied up. At first, we thought it was somebody found out I was an SDS in 1968 or something. But I've never made a secret of that. But it turned out that what happened was that when they were printing them. They print them in sheets of 10, and then they laminate them and cut them up. And the sheet, and there were 10 people out of the couple hundred that got printed that got printed upside down or backwards or smudged or something.
Yeah.
And so it had to get redone. And so at 5 o'clock this morning, my credentials were finally available, which got me, you know, not just into the Capitol, but into the Capitol and up here onto the... the platform,
right there.
Yeah, I mean, I could underhand lob a softball and it would land at the lectern. I mean,
though you probably shouldn't.
No, I have a feeling I'd be on the ground real fast.
some lovely little juxtapositions in the Capitol. I watching the people milling around and you know, greeting one another before President Obama. Arrives. There was Al Gore talking with Cindy and John McCain, the man who, you know, of course, you know, could have been president had he not run one of the worst campaigns in presidential election history. Yep. And there was Jimmy Carter chatting with Robert Byrd also, Robert Byrd in a wheelchair.
I was interested to see when the senators came out and were just standing here right next to us before, you know, the event began, that Joe Lieberman and John Kerry engaged in a rather long and animated and clearly very, very friendly conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which,
wow.
Yeah.
You know. Could be surprising to some, but the Senate is a club. It's a very clubby thing.
And, yeah, it's a membership first, ideology second, apparently.
Yes.
Something
yeah,
like that.
I believe so. And no hard feelings, I guess.
Yeah, with the possible exception of Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
I was looking around for Bernie. I didn't see him. I'm sure he was there.
He must be there.
But it's,
people still out on the mall. People still looking real happy out there, waving their American flags.
Yeah.
Everybody got an American flag.
Well, here's another story for you. This morning at 5:30 or thereabouts, I was trying to get from the various stations around here, in any case, it was one of the train stations, down to Union Station. And I got down into the station, and there was, you know, hundreds of people along the side of the track, and a car pulls up, a train pulls up, and it's packed to the gills. I mean, sardines, right? No way you could get in. And there's a bunch of us standing there by one particular door. I mean, every door had the crowd around it. And people in the train are looking out like, don't even try, you know. Just the looks on their faces, you know, like, don't even try. And you just wait for the doors to close. The next train comes, and third train comes by, fourth train. And as the fourth train is coming, these three women came up, and just, you know, people were moving around and came up in line, and they were just the bubbly, you know, the bubbly personality.
Yes.
The stereotype bubbly personality.
Right.
And two were white, one was African American, and they were clearly friends. And they're standing there next to me and about, I don't know, six, eight other people by that door just as the door opens. And all three of them, like, as if they had practiced it, and the people in the car looking out with that, you know, and they yelled, yes, we can, you know, with a big smile, right? And everybody in the train car yells, yes, we can. I mean, it was like it shouted back, and it was like the waters parted, you know. Oh. People started moving back and moving out of the way, and they made room for us. And we got about 8 or 10 people in that train car. And people were smiling and talking and everything. And it was just remarkable.
Did Republicans feel the way we feel 8 years ago? You wonder. I mean, I'm looking at these people out on the mall. I'm looking at, you know, everybody's just got a smile on their face a mile wide and waving their flags and all. You know,
I'm guessing they did in 1980, because your father's presidency was a transformation. I mean, that was, and Barack Obama pointed this out, you know, much to Bill Clinton's chagrin, that really that was a transformational presidency. You had a man whose fundamental ideology, fundamental belief in you know, what government is and how it works and what it should do, was different than the preceding 40 years.
Yeah.
And so I think that I know for my father, who was a Republican and a very relatively active one, that was a big deal. That was, you know, 1980 was a big deal. But I'm not sure that Republicans have felt that way since then.
No, I suspect not. Well, you know, they haven't really had somebody who they felt that great personal affection for.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we and, you know, most Democrats, progressives, liberals feel affection for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, personal affection in a way that many Republicans and a lot of people felt for Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
Back in 1980. But
well,
but
even
since
even Democrats. I think your dad had a. He was a genuine, or at least, I mean, I don't know him. You're his son. My sense of him was that he was a genuinely decent person.
Yes. Yeah.
And
no doubt.
You know, setting aside all the politics, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, it does.
Because you know, there's a lot of politicians who aren't.
That's right.
Just
to put it mildly. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, what a day. What a day now.
This is a truly historic moment. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back from the break, we'll pick up your phone calls. And Ron, you'll pull the calls out of the air.
I will.
We'll hear what our listeners have to say about these things, and also you can give us a little update on what's going on in the world, Ron. And, check out the news.
Okay.
Because I am here computerless at the Capitol building. Tom Hartman,
that's kind of
Ron
liberating,
Reagan with
I
you
think.
Here, right here on Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yee-haw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
If you owe the IRS over $20,000 in back taxes, the next 60 seconds could change your life. Nationwide Tax Relief founder and CEO, Richard Boggs.
2009 is here, and the recent federal bailout has given the IRS more power to collect back taxes than at any other time in history. However, due to our current economy, thousands of hardworking Americans who have never qualified for tax relief before now qualify. If you're tired of the wage garnishments, the bank levies, the unfiled tax returns, my team of expert tax attorneys can get you a fresh start. And we can even achieve a 50 to 90% tax debt reduction for many clients. If you owe more than $20,000 to the IRS or the state, your best opportunity to settle is right now.
For your free confidential consultation, call the attorneys at Nationwide Tax Relief at 888-477-5292. That's 888-477-5292. Call 888-477-5292.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times, offering various prizes to its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you're agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents, at least 18 years old, and may only enter one time unless otherwise stated in the complete official contest rules. Only one prize per household for any contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
Men, listen carefully. If you suffer from any type of erectile dysfunction, Oregon Male Performance Clinic can help you now, regardless of your age or medical history. If you want to perform for 45 minutes, an hour, 90 minutes, or longer, call 503-443-1000 in Portland. There's no pain or surgery, just the newest available safe and effective medications given to you by one of our licensed Oregon physicians. Our doctors are so sure you'll have a positive reaction to our medication on the first visit that if you don't, it's free, guaranteed. In Portland, call 503-443-1000 now. If you want to perform for up to 90 minutes or longer, or if you suffer from PE, it doesn't matter what medications or health problems you have. If Viagra and Cialis have let you down, in Portland, call 503-443-1000 today and see why our patients now have happy, healthy, complete sex lives.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
What if we told you we'd created the perfect card for your business? A card that can give you the working capital you need, interest-free. A card that can earn you rewards to reinvest in your business. A card that's not a credit card. Well, meet the American Express Open Charge Card. To get the purchasing power millions of owners already have in their wallets, call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. American Express Open. Calling all business owners. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at BeavertonLodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Exactly what that change would mean if I'm president.
And we're back here, Ron Reagan with Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman program, but a very special Tom Hartman show, this being the day of the inauguration of our 44th president, Barack Hussein Obama. Tom, quite a day there. We've got a bunch of calls here. Why don't we take one or two? Ken is calling from Long Beach, California. Ken, you're on Air America.
Hello, Ken.
You're on Air America.
Oh, okay. Yes, calling from beautiful California here. It's about 80 degrees. This is actually directed towards. I'm so happy to see Bush just off in that helicopter. You know, I'll tell you that.
I know.
I thought I'd never see that, but anyway. Ron, you were asking a question about you didn't know which day was the coldest.
Yes.
It turns out your dad's inauguration was both the coldest and the warmest inaugurations.
No kidding.
It was 7 degrees. I don't know if you were there or not.
I was there for both of them, and I knew it was really cold. I just couldn't remember how cold. 7 degrees. Wow, that is cold.
That's what they said, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Seven degrees, and it was in the 50s. It was also the warmest inauguration.
In 1981, yeah.
Was that in 81?
Yeah, it seemed a little chilly to me when I was down there in 81, but then I was a Californian, so it would have, I guess. But, boy, 7 degrees.
The coldest and the warmest. So
thanks for the update on that, Ken. Little historical trivia. Thank you, Ken. Well, Tom, you have no reason to feel sorry for yourself. it's got to be 20 degrees warmer than it was in 84.
Oh, I'm just blown away by standing here. I mean, I'm standing under and looking at Lady Liberty, the statue on top of the dome of the Capitol building.
Yeah,
and you know, I think most people don't realize that the founders, when they put this country together, many of them were Masons, some of them were deists, some of them were mystics, some of them, like Patrick Henry, were just fundamentalist Christians, and there's a whole variety. But they were students of the Greeks and Romans, the Greek democracy and the Roman Republic, and they felt that we should have, it was already pretty understood that we had a god or gods, male gods, you know, the Unitary or the Trinity.
Yeah.
But there were no female deities. And so there was an effort to create a female deity. And so they feminized the name of Amerigo Vespucci's first name, America. they created this goddess for America. And her name... they feminized the Christopher Columbus's name, and her name was Columbia. And she took many forms. She was the goddess of agriculture. Sometimes you see her holding wheat or corn. She was the goddess of war. She was the goddess of liberty. She was the goddess of justice. She stands outside the Department of Justice holding the scales and a blindfold. And it's all the same woman. It's all the same goddess, Columbia. She was on our coins continuously up until, I think, the 70s or 80s. And most people just, you know, have no idea that there's the goddess over the Capitol building. And I've told this story on the air before, but it's an interesting one. When we lived in Vermont, the space shuttle Columbia went down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was writing my book about Jefferson at that time, and I had just been reading all this history about the founders and wanting to come up with a goddess in Columbia. And they had, even the District of Columbia, they had, the reason why people can't vote in the District of Columbia is because they wanted to create a place that was so sacred for democracy that the people would never put their own personal self-interest ahead of anything. Therefore, they couldn't even vote. They were just dedicated to the goddess. They were dedicated to the nation. And this district of the god. This is literally the district of the goddess. And so anyhow, I went out and I got the paper that morning. We didn't have a television at the time, and brought it in and opened it up. And here's the headline: Columbia dies over Texas. And I thought, my God, George Bush
killed the goddess of liberty.
Right. First thought that went through my mind.
Oh, he's picturing George Bush maybe with Dick Cheney by his side out in a field with a shotgun as it comes over.
50 millimeter,
over, you know,
yeah.
Plinking away at this. You know.
Let's pick up a few more phone calls here, Ron.
Sure. Let's see. We've got Frank is calling from Los Angeles. Frank, you're on Air America.
Hey, Frank, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey there. You're on Air America.
Hi, this is a bittersweet day as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
The
it took 8 years of Bush to get us here. But when I hear Barack Obama talk about charity as if the root word is pity rather than social hope, and when I hear that Barack Obama wishes to put Social Security back on the bargaining table, I think that we're in maybe for 4 more years of Bush light, or in deference to skin color, Bush dark. I don't like to hear that he's messing with Social Security, and I don't like him to use the word hope when he doesn't understand what charity is.
Well, I appreciate your sentiments, Frank, but I'm sorry. I'm not going to go there. I spoke last night. I was one of the keynoters at the Progressive Democrats for America gig. Tom Hayden was there, and there's a bunch of folks. In any case, Tim Carpenter, of course, who put the thing together. PDAmerica.org is the website. Mm-hmm. And there was a number of us who, I spent a couple of hours there. We had dinner and had a lot of conversation about how do we make sure, because Barack Obama, to a certain extent, is an empty vessel. Every politician is. I mean, it's very rare that a politician has the kind of power to make things happen. It's the people who have the power. And so it's up to us to hold him accountable. It's up, or even more importantly, it's up to us to define the agenda for America, to push that agenda, to make things work, to make it succeed. I mean, that's our work. That's what we have to do. And to sit around and go, well, you know, he's not this and he's not that. I'm sorry. You know, that's such a cop-out.
It does highlight, though, one danger for Barack Obama, and that is in the high expectations that people have set for him and that which he has set for himself. If those are disappointed,
I've been saying for a long time, he's our national Rorschach test.
Yeah.
You know, we progressives put on him their greatest hopes, and conservatives put on him the greatest fears, and the reality is going to be somewhere in the middle. But we need to have a progressive majority in America. It's 28 minutes after the hour, I think, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And we've just witnessed another of the series of events that's taking place today. Barack Obama is now in the old House chamber in the Capitol, where traditionally, well, since 1953, incoming presidents have sat down to have lunch with their Democratic peers, Democratic small d peers. And for the first time, we saw Barack Obama be played into a room with Hail to the Chief. You'll get used to that song after a while.
A remarkable thing. Tom Hartman here with you. Ron Reagan with you. Ron, live from Seattle, aren't you, Ron?
Yes, today. Yes, indeed.
And I'm sitting here at the nation's capital, sitting outside, right to, I don't know which side, which, we're going to have to figure out which side. Lavisa, which direction is north? Do you know? North is that way, so the Washington Monument is west. Okay, so we're on the west side,
of the
Capitol building,
yeah.
And looking at the Washington Monument, but sitting here in the shadow of the Capitol building. So Ron, let's pick up a few more calls here.
All righty, let's see. We've got Denny calling from Wenatchee, Washington, right here in my home state. Denny, you're on Air America.
Good morning, Ron and Tom.
Good, Denny.
And I just wanted to comment. I'm 62. And this is one of the greatest days of my life. I've been watching all the faces on television, coast to coast, they're showing people. And all us old folks are crying. But to see the smile on the young people, it's just wonderful.
Yeah, it's quite a day, Danny. It's quite a day. Great day for all of us.
And I just say to all my fellow Americans, thank you so much for making this happen.
Yeah, we did it. Tom,
yes, we
did it, Tom and Denny, and it's, you know, the American people stood up a few months ago and said, enough, you know, we need something new, and we did this. This is the result of our work.
Boy, it's a great day. God bless all of you, and take care.
Thank you, Denny. Appreciate it very much. Appreciate the call. You take care as well. Tom, I've identified at least three political transitions that are going on here, you know, at one and the same time, it seems to me. One is the obvious one, you know, an outgoing Republican administration, incoming Democratic administration, the transition from Bush to Obama. But there are two others that are really more taking place within the Democratic Party, it seems to me. One is the more emotional transfer of, how would you put it, almost as psychic baggage in a way, from Kennedy to Obama. You almost feel that an emotional mantle has been passed from the Kennedy dynasty now to this new figure, Barack Obama. And as well, we have a more perhaps practical transition going on, politically speaking, within the Democratic Party, that Bill Clinton is no longer the head of the Democratic Party. It is Barack Obama now. The Clintons have been pushed ever so slightly, perhaps, but to the back. So this is a remarkable thing. It is not just a transition from Republican to Democrat. It's much deeper than that. Let's grab another call here while we have a chance. Jeff is calling from just south of here in Tacoma. Jeff, you're on Air America. Hello, Jeff.
Listen, hi guys, it's great to talk to you. Something really weird happened right as Obama started to speak. I got this premonition almost that he was going to say something about being humbled.
Uh-huh.
And right off the bat, there he went. And it was like, to me, it was so weird because it, you know, I'm not there. I'm listening on the radio. Like, I know there's a lot of people there, but it's not like, you know, it obviously come to mind. It's almost like we are humbled by this moment, you know, and it takes somebody like Obama to let us know that he's one of us. He's not going to be, you know, King George. He's going to be Mr. Obama, and he's going to do the right thing. And following on that, he mentioned the working people, you know, the ordinary mm-hmm. people like you and me that struggle every day, and we haven't been talked to like adults, and our labor hasn't been valued.
And he came from that, too. Let me interject here. We dropped Barresti in line for a second, but he came from that. I mean, this is a guy whose mom was on food stamps.
Yeah, it's true. This is not a scion of wealth that we have here in the Oval Office now. Tom, but when you dropped out, I don't know how much of I was speaking just before about the transitions that we're seeing here. The obvious one, of course, Bush to Obama, Republican to Democrat. But within the Democratic Party, the two other transitions, one being the emotional mantle being passed from the Kennedy dynasty, as it were, to Obama. And then the more practical political mantle within the Democratic Party being passed from Bill Clinton to Barack Obama. Bill Clinton is no longer the alpha dog of the Democratic Party. It is now Barack Obama.
That's right. That's right. And a significant one it is. Ellen Ratner and I were talking this morning as we were walking down here to try and track down my passes. And Ellen used to be a family therapist in another lifetime, and she was commenting about how Bill Clinton had, you know, his father left, and, you know, when he was little and all this kind of thing, and George W. Bush was basically raised in a parentless fashion. You know, his parents shipped him off to boarding school from day one and like that, and mm-hmm. and to the extent that he was parented, it was apparently very poorly done by Barbara. And she said, reading Barack Obama's autobiography, she said she got it that here's a guy who, again, was wounded by his father leaving, yet he worked through it. In fact, that book is kind of the story of his own therapy, of his own coming to terms with who he is and what he's all about. Here's a guy who's actually quite sure of himself. Here's a guy who actually has a sense of who he is and doesn't need other people to define him for himself, mm-hmm. doesn't need accomplishment to define him for himself, and therefore can reach for higher heights, can work for greater, mm-hmm. for the greater good, for its own value, rather than for the recognition that comes along with it.
That's a very important point, actually, that we have a president now who's very comfortable in his own skin, at least seemingly so.
Everybody who knows him for the last 30 years has been saying words to that effect.
And it is a contrast from the, and again, I don't mean to spend the day dumping on the previous president, but it is a contrast from the previous 8 years where a man who, despite the pretenses to the contrary, was actually a very insecure fellow, I think, George W. Bush. And that is a ruinous thing to have in the Oval Office, that kind of deep personal insecurity. Politics aside, you want somebody in there that is calm and confident in themselves, whether they're a Republican or Democrat.
Franklin
Roosevelt.
Yeah. There have been a few, and then there have been a few who, well, probably not so much in our lifetime, but it was an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Indeed.
Back to our calls, Ron.
Yes, let's try. Let's see. I'm perusing the list now. Let's go to Scott in Maine. Hey, Scott, you're on Air America.
Yes, hello.
Hi,
Scott. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm kind of calling, making a comment, and I hate to rain on the parade today because I'm thrilled myself, but I've been thinking that there's this huge collective relief in America and white America, and we're all embracing this, and I'm wondering if we're not trying to get rid of our guilt and trying to say, oh, everything is great, when in fact we still have a long way to go. Native Americans aren't treated well here. A lot of people aren't treated well. And I just wonder if sometimes we aren't jumping on this huge bandwagon and everything and really not there.
Your thoughts are well said and appreciated, but Barack Obama made the comment somewhat recently that I was maybe during one of his press conferences when he was still running in the primary that, somebody said, are you black enough, or words to that effect. And he said, I can tell you I am when I try to get a cab
in New York City. That's right.
No, obviously, this is not, the sky opened and the sun came out and the birds are singing and the angels are, no.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, this is a transformational moment for this country. It really and truly is, and for the world. I think the most important thing is that, did we talk about on this show, Ron, you and I, about DNA, nations based on DNA versus based on ideas?
No, I don't think we did.
Okay, I'm a little earlier. I've been since I'm sitting here on Radio Row, Ellen Ratner, who usually does news commentary, keeps throwing the microphone at me and saying, here, you're, so I've been on a bunch of local shows this morning. what sets apart America so much, yesterday I interviewed the former Prime Minister of Ireland, and virtually every other country in the world, people say, I am a fill-in-the-blank. I am a Belgian because my parents were Belgians, and they look a certain way, right? In other words, you're a member of that nation by virtue of DNA. Mm-hmm. And our nation was created, and now it didn't work out this way altogether at the very beginning, but nonetheless, it was created on the concept that we are not a nation founded in DNA, but a nation founded in the ideals, the liberal ideals of the Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And we are seeing the fulfillment of that in the election of Obama. Now, that's not the end point. That's just the beginning point.
No.
But this idea of a nation that is founded on an idea rather than founded on DNA, I think it's such an important one. And I think that was the subtext of Obama's speech. And in fact, I thought, Rick Warren went on too much about race, frankly. So, my thoughts.
Well, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. This inauguration is a milestone on the journey, but it is not the destination. We're not there yet.
There you go. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Ed Schultz.
So there's going to have to be some more discussion about this. Which is healthy? Which is positive?
Noon to 3.
And I think that we as lefties have got to make sure we know how to embrace all this stuff.
He calls them the way he sees them.
Just because Pelosi and Obama may disagree on the timing of the repealing of the Bush tax cuts doesn't mean that it's nuclear war.
The Ed Schultz Show.
There's going to be more than enough stuff to talk about.
Noon to 3. AM 620 KPOJ. Online at 620KPOJ.com.
Men, listen carefully. If you suffer from any type of erectile dysfunction, Oregon Male Performance Clinic can help you now, regardless of your age or medical history. If you want to perform for 45 minutes, an hour, 90 minutes, or longer, call 503-443-1000 in Portland. There's no pain or surgery, just the newest available safe and effective medications given to you by one of our licensed Oregon physicians. Our doctors are so sure you will have a positive reaction to our medication on the first visit that if you don't, it's free, guaranteed. In Portland, call 503-443-1000 now. If you want to perform for up to 90 minutes or longer, or if you suffer from PE, it doesn't matter what medications or health problems you have. If Viagra and Cialis have let you down, in Portland, call 503-443-1000 today and see why our patients now have happy, healthy, complete sex lives.
What if there were a way to guarantee your money from taking a loss in this volatile economy? Hi, I'm Blake Kingsley of Oregon Equity Management. Fact, my clients haven't lost a dime in this market because their money is protected by state and federal regulations. Folks, if you want to stop the bleeding, call me today to learn how you too can protect your money, guaranteed. Blake Kingsley, 503-686-8423. That's 686-8423 today.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. True confession. I'm hungry. I can't stop thinking about the healthy fish and chips, classic or spicy Baja fish taco platters, crisp salads, and Dana's homemade soups at the Hawthorne Fish House and the Corbett Fish House. Salmon, halibut, catfish, or cod, it's all delicious. If you want a taste of the Midwest, try the perch, walleye, or even the fried cheese curds. They make a mean, spicy black bean garden burger as well. Hawthorne Fish House Southeast and Corbett Fish House Southwest.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the perks for KPOJ listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. Here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of hundreds of dollars. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners, only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
And today was yet another part of that answer. Ron Reagan here with Tom Hartman for our inaugural coverage, inauguration of the 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama. And Tom, I was just watching some of the video feed and some of the news reports coming out of the Capitol here, uh-huh. And an interesting Kelly O'Donnell of NBC had an interesting little tidbit that I'll pass along. John Cornyn of Texas has intimated that he might exercise his prerogative, which he may do, to hold up the nomination or confirmation of Hillary Clinton to be Secretary of State. Yes, and apparently the two of them met at this luncheon in the old House chamber there in the Capitol. And Kelly O'Donnell is reporting that there was some good-natured yet energetic hand gesturing and conversation going on between the two of them. But we see the this intimation that it's not just going to be a cakewalk here. That the Republicans are they're at least considering immediately pushing back. They were hoping to get Hillary Clinton confirmed on a voice vote, you know, today or tomorrow, is what I understand anyway.
Yeah.
But apparently at least one Republican is thinking he may put a little sand in the gears there.
I think this is going to be warfare. I mean, it's anybody who thinks that the Republicans are going to join hands and sing Kumbaya is nuts.
Yeah.
This is going to be a real battle, and it's already started. You know, I'm getting the emails now. You know, from the usual sources of, and with the socialist word, of course, which is a word that I'm half inclined to start calling myself a socialist just for the sake of getting the word out in dialogue.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist, and that's where I'm at politically.
Yeah.
And you can summarize it very simply by saying that those areas, and by the way, this is, in my opinion, this was what the founders had in mind when this country was created.
Mm-hmm.
Those areas that have to do with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the core stuff on which this country was founded. Those are the provinces, those areas are that's the commons. That's the province of we the people,
right,
which is government.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have a right to liberty, for example, then the government, of course, makes sure that we have safety and liberty. We have an army, we have police, we have laws, we have, we have the ability to have liberty. If we have a right to happiness, then that means that, at least in the concept of the Enlightenment, that we have the right to be able to earn a living, to get an education, for example, falls into the right of happiness.
Mm-hmm. Healthcare.
I'd say that's the right to life.
Yeah, that would be.
And so we have these three things, and in those three areas, and really only those three areas, we don't have a right to own a TV set, or a right to have a computer, or a right to have the latest Armani fashions or whatever. I mean, I don't want the government in the business of business.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the government, but I would be very happy if the Federal Reserve was bought by the U.S. government and put under the province of the Treasury, and we went back to issuing our own currency. I would be very happy if we had a single-payer health care system.
Mm-hmm.
The other conversation that I've had with a number of people while I've been out here is the broad concern that the health insurance companies are going to end up continuing their ongoing role as parasitic leeches attached to the body politic and body economic of the United States of America, and that's the area that people are really concerned about. John Conyers has introduced House Resolution 676 to say, no, we're going to have national single-payer health insurance, health care, Medicare for all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And perhaps one, I forget who it was, but yesterday one of my guests said maybe we could even have, expand the Veterans Administration as well.
In fact,
I believe it was the congressman who is the chairman of the Veterans the committee, the House Veterans Committee, who said, if we simply extended VA benefits to all family members, it's socialized medicine. It literally is, the VA.
Sure.
Medicare is not. It's not socialized medicine. It's single payer, and there's a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah.
But we could have both. We could have single payer and socialized medicine compete.
Your observation is
very,
excellent.
Very interesting.
And the notion, I mean, if government is the problem, then what you're saying is that we're the problem. If government and the people are an us against them proposition, then our system is already broken down. Because we the people are supposed to be the government.
Right. And so that's where it breaks down for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Is they are hewing the Scalia types, and he's fresh in my mind because he was sitting facing me throughout the entire ceremony. And he was the face I most often, although George Bush was, there were three or four faces that were just popping out of the crowd, just a stone's throw from me here. He was with this funny hat that he was wearing. He just kind of looked like your jovial, crazy uncle. But in any case, their rhetoric collides with the reality of the sensibilities on which this country was founded.
Yeah.
That there is this commons, that we're all here together, that we're all in this together, that we are our brother's keeper to a certain extent, and that there are these appropriate functions for government that have to do with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And
the great hypocrisy of the Bush administration, of course, but, you know, hewing to the Republican line of government's the problem, we're going to get it off your back. But by the way, we're going to usurp all sorts of power to ourselves, and don't you dare ask any questions. how do those things go together?
Right. Government's the problem, except we want to know what's going on in your bedroom and with whom and what are you smoking in your living room. Yeah, it all gets very strange.
Tom, but I've enjoyed being with you here today. I'm going to take off in a minute and get ready for my show later.
Okay, well,
it's
thank
been
you,
a pleasure.
Ron. I do appreciate your holding down the fort for me. It's much appreciated. Ron, have a great day, and we'll see you around.
Okay,
that's a deal. And I'll be back.
Stay warm.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you live from Washington, D.C., sitting outside the west side of the United States Capitol Building. As they're taking down the chairs, unwiring the wires, shutting down the lights, it's real interesting to watch, to see the whole thing, how much incredible excitement there was, and how it's now all moved. It's all moved, and so now there's the parade, and then tonight the inaugural balls, and then tomorrow, even today apparently. Back to business. Barack Obama giving an absolutely brilliant inaugural address. I thought one that struck all the right notes. We have a few excerpts from it here. Here's the first.
My fellow citizens, I stand here today humbled by the task before us, grateful for the trust you've bestowed, mindful of the sacrifices borne by our ancestors.
And
starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
And I think that was so much, that second clip was so much a Franklin Roosevelt kind of statement, you know, we are not going to be afraid. In fact, he pointed out in his speech that America has been tested before. We have had terrible times before. If you think it's bad now, you don't know the lessons of history, essentially. And that we have always stood up and dusted ourselves off and moved forward. And it's a great metaphor. In fact, it's one of my old favorite stories I've told many times on this show of I think it was Paramahansa Yogananda in his book Autobiography of a Yogi talked about the story of these two guys who were walking down the street. Maybe it was Ram Dass and Be Here Now. In any case, two guys walking down the street in India, the old dirt road, and they both trip on a rivulet in the road, a crack in the road in the dirt, and fall on their faces, and And one of them reaches over and grabs a branch and starts hitting himself on the head as he's laying there in the dirt going, "Oh, you idiot, you fell in the dirt. How could you be so stupid?" And the other guy stands up and dusts himself off and says, "You know, I'm going to keep on walking." And those are our choices. And what was remarkable for me personally was sitting here watching George W. Bush and the look on his face when Barack Obama said many of the things he said about the crises that we have and the, you know, how we are going to take them on. We are not going to shrink from these tasks. We are going to go forward. And I'm just, as all the chairs are emptied now, I'm noticing that the chairs that Bush and Cheney, or the one next to it, are actually different than all the rest of the chairs. I guess they had choreographed that right down to the level of what kind of chair is it going to be. So, anyway, here's another clip from Barack Obama.
Our founding fathers, faced with perils that we can scarcely imagine, drafted a charter to assure the rule of law and the rights of man, a charter expanded by the blood of generations. Those ideals still light the world, and we will not give them up for expedience's sake.
Faced with perils we can scarcely imagine. And that is so true. I mean, it is so vividly and absolutely true that they were faced with perils that we can scarcely imagine. And, I mean, to think, you know, the 56 people who signed the Declaration of Independence, the moment they did that, they literally signed warrants for their own death. And every one of them, at one point or another, in one way or another, had to flee his home as a consequence of that. Many of them died. Many of them sacrificed tremendously so that this building that I'm sitting on the edge of could be built, this nation could come into being, this extraordinary concept of creating a nation on an idea rather than on a tribe. Every other nation in the world, to the best of my knowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think not. I mean, even the Greeks, with all their talk about democracy, it was for the Greeks. The Romans, arguably, they incorporated some of their conquered people, but you had to live in Rome to vote. So the outlying regions, even if you had citizenship, you couldn't vote. So they were basically all about the tribe. The United States of America, we came into being with this idea. We are a nation based on this idea of the Enlightenment, these ideas of Jean-Jacques Rousseau and John Locke and his second treatise on government and the ideals and the idea that a people can govern themselves, that a free people can govern themselves. We have one more clip here from Barack Obama. Let's share that with you.
This is the meaning of our liberty and our creed, why men and women and children of every race and every faith can join in celebration across this magnificent mall, and why a man whose father less than 60 years ago might not have been served at a local restaurant can now stand before you to take a most sacred oath.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's such a remarkable thing. It reminds me when Lamar and I were doing the research on what became the book Ultimate Sacrifice, and our more recent book about the King assassination, Legacy of Secrecy. It reminds me of when I first tracked down Harry Enrique Ruiz Williams, and Harry Williams was more or less the number two guy at the Bay of Pigs invasion. And his partner in that was a fellow who was, they were both largely Cuban ancestry. Harry was Spanish. His partner was African-Cuban. And when Jack Kennedy ransomed Harry and the other, I mean, the Kennedy family actually raised, I think it was $1 million that they had to give to Castro, raised this money to ransom the prisoners, the Bay of Pigs prisoners, out. And they had this event in Florida down in the, I think it was in the Orange Bowl. It's been 17 years since Harry told me this story. Harry has now passed on, but you can read much of his story in Ultimate Sacrifice. And in any case, Bobby Kennedy and Harry and this friend of theirs, who was also one of the Bay of Pigs guys, who was African-American or African-Cuban, they had this event in the Orange Bowl, and the flag of Cuba was given to Harry by Jack Kennedy, and he said someday this will fly over a free Cuba and all that kind of thing. And Bobby was all stoked up, and the three of them are, it's midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, something like this, and they're walking through downtown Miami, and they go into, as I recall, it might have been Orlando, and they go into this little all night diner and sit down, and a woman comes over. This is 1962, as I recall, maybe early 63. I'd have to go back and look at the timeline. And the waitress comes over, and she points her face at Bobby. He was he wasn't Hispanic and he wasn't black. She looks at Bobby. She points her hand or her finger at a sign on the wall that says, "We reserve the right to refuse service to anybody." And then she points at Harry and Bobby's friend, the African guy, the African American, and says, "We don't serve," and you know, drops the N-word there. She says, We don't serve these people here." And Bobby is like, "What?" And she says, and she repeats herself. And he said, "Do you understand who I am?" And she said, "I don't care if you're the son of the Lord God Almighty. We don't serve, you know, et cetera." And he said, "I'm the Attorney General of the United States. I'm the chief law enforcement officer of this nation." And she basically repeated it. She threw them out of the restaurant. And Harry, when he told me this story, he was just, he was talking about how they were walking down the street, and Bobby was just, "I can't believe they did that. How, you know," and it was like his slap in the face moment of the reality of racism in the United States in 1962. And Barack Obama today, talking about how, you know, 60 years ago, well, much more recently than that, actually, his father may not have been served here in Washington, D.C. How far we've come. I mean, granted, we still have a long way to go. But how far we've come. What an extraordinary thing. What an extraordinary day. We'll pick up your calls, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com. We'll be right back from the nation's capital.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartmann, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
A big name in anti-aging right now is Dr. Arthur Perry. He's been all over TV. He's heard on radio. He has a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue. Here's the twist, though. Dr. Perry is a plastic surgeon, but he likes to have his patients try a cream called Night Skin before they go schedule their procedures. Night Skin goes on while you sleep. It supports natural collagen and elastin production. So when you use Night Skin, it reduces the appearance of your fine lines. It makes your skin smoother. It even fades away those unwanted brown spots that come with age. Dr. Perry says many of his patients call off their procedure appointments after using Night Skin because they're that happy with the results they see in the mirror. Now Dr. Perry's Night Skin is available for anyone to get risk-free. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003. Call right away for your risk-free trial of the Night Skin Anti-Aging Cream. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003.
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhodes.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout? I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself, so there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country,
3 to 6,
you are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ
and 620KPOJ.com.
At a time when Portland homeowners need it the most, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive to a 50-year low. So if you've been patiently waiting for that perfect time to refinance, pull the trigger today and lock in rates as low as, are you ready? 5% flat with an APR of 5.25. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this dream rate can vanish in the blink of an eye. So be decisive and grab the phone right now. We all know this financial crisis will end, and when it does, you'll be so glad you locked in that 5% rate with an APR of 5.25. Listen, when others can't help, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money with zero out-of-pocket expenses. So call 718-1000 today. And when you like it, lock it. 503-718-1000.
Paramount Equity, lending with expertise. Paramount Equity Mortgage.
License number ML3256.
I'm about to present to you a straightforward commercial for GEICO, the third largest personal auto insurer in the country. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to GEICO, and GEICO received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Standard & Poor's has consistently awarded GEICO a AAA rating for financial strength. This is usually where I'd say something cute or clever, but like I said at the beginning, we're keeping this straightforward. Goodbye to you now.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Want to know something cool about GEICO and renter's insurance?
Do I?
Okay, well, let's say you buy some presents, but they get stolen.
Oh, mercy me!
Let me finish. Well, GEICO can help with that, even if they're stolen from your car or right out of your hands.
My word.
Not done yet. And coverage is as little as $12 a month.
Mwah!
You just kissed me.
I get excited.
Yeah, maybe a little.
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at BeavertonLodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Change comes from within America. It comes from the people, from we the people. Tom Hartman here at the People's House, the United States Congress, doing our third hour live. The sun just came back out again, sitting out here outside in the chilly cold, but it's a beautiful day. What an extraordinary event, and what a rare opportunity to stand fewer than 150 feet, Well, I don't know. I'm lousy at distance, but from Barack Obama as he was sworn in, what an opportunity. Craig in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey, Craig, welcome to the show. What's up?
Hello, Professor Hartman.
Yeah.
What a glorious day, huh?
It is. It really is.
Just to stray a little bit, am I mistaken, or did George Bush leave office without making any pardons?
Well, I don't think that we know yet, because my guess is if he did some really nasty stuff like at 11 o'clock this morning, he wouldn't have issued a press release. And my recollection of the Clinton pardons is that the eyebrow-raising stuff about them came out in the weeks following them, if my memory serves me right, you know, because there were several hundred that were done all at once, and it took a while to find out who are all these people and what's the deal. And I think the Mark Rich, was it? Pardon, that really didn't become a scandal until several weeks later. But all that said, here's a thought that occurred to me last night, and perhaps it was yesterday. I don't think I said it on the air though yesterday. I think this popped into my brain after I got off the air. And that was,
what if George, I'm just looking at it from George Bush's point of view, if he wants to make sure that nobody is going to testify against him, if he wants to make sure that all of his co-criminals, co-conspirators, collaborators, whatever you want to call it, if he wants to make sure that they stay on his team, what better way than not to pardon them? Because if he pardons them, then they can testify to the truth without fear of prosecution. And right now, they all have a very, very strong reason to not write a book, to keep their mouths shut, to not say anything to anybody, because they'll all go to jail.
Investigations start, though. That's going to be precious little protection.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how willing they are to lie before Congress, as we saw last week with the guy who was in charge of this.
Prosecution, they probably will, in order to save their own skins, fess up.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, from day one, I've been saying that rather than, I would have loved to have seen an impeachment of George Bush proceeding, but frankly, what really needs to be done, and now it can be done, whether it will be done is a whole other issue, but hopefully it will be.
Now, I'm not a vengeful person, and I'm not a believer in the death penalty, but I do believe that people who do the things, the kind of crimes that Bush and his cronies have done, should be removed from polite society.
He is responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands, the unnecessary deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, and the destruction of the lives of millions. And that should not come without a price. I agree with you, and thank you for the call. I appreciate your comments. Where I was going with that is that if this prosecution is going to be pursued, if we're going to find out, you know, who did what, when, how, why, all that kind of thing, it needs to be done the way that classic organized crime prosecutions, because make no mistakes, this is an organized criminal enterprise running out of the White House, and Karl Rove was right at the center of it, and the Don Siegelman case, in my opinion, and Don Siegelman, by the way, I got an email from him a while back. He's got $800,000 in legal bills. This guy is really in trouble, and he didn't do anything wrong, right? He did nothing wrong. And this is all because Karl Rove had decided he was going to use the Justice Department for political prosecutions. So go to donsiegelman.com and toss a few bucks his way if you can, or even just a note of encouragement. Tell your friends about it. But anyhow, my point in all this is that I think that if you're going to do a prosecution, you start at the bottom and work your way up. You don't start at the top and work your way down. You get the low-level guys, you flip them. They talk about the middle-level guys. You flip them. And this was an opportunity, frankly, that Congress had when they had Sarah Taylor before them Tim Geithner. No, he's the attorney general. I can't remember the names of all the flunkies, the Bush flunkies that Congress had. There was a whole bunch of them. And a number of them were, you know, on the edge of confessing to crimes. And if Congress had just had the will to say, okay, let's really get into this here a little bit, and let's look at the possibility of appointing a special prosecutor and actually doing something about this. Well, maybe now that'll happen, and I really believe that it is possible, maybe not in the Bush administration, but it is possible, hopefully now and in this administration, to both chew gum and walk at the same time, that we can look forward and look behind, as it were. That we can hold these people accountable and have political investigations and criminal prosecutions and remake a new and better America. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
It's been a long time coming, but I know. change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
It definitely will. The question is, you know, how much change, how rapidly, what direction, whether, how much Republican obstruction is there going to be? Is anybody going to be able to get some smelling salts to Harry? You know, all these kind of things. But we'll see. Change, I think, will come. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the West. I don't know what they call it, a portico, whatever. I'm sitting out. Sitting outside on the west side of the United States Capitol building here, just a few feet away from the podium where about 2 hours ago I watched Barack Obama take the oath of office as the 44th president of the United States of America. And we've got some callers here. Stephanie Mary Lou is on the line in Washington. Hey, Mary Lou, what's up?
I watched the inauguration on PBS with my radio ear plug in my ear so I could listen to you guys. But they have the pundits they have afterward are usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of funny watching them try to decide and pull out the big line from his speech, you know.
Right.
And what it reminded me of is what I read about the Gettysburg Express address. Was that at first it wasn't really regarded as this wonderful, wonderful speech, but that it was so powerfully when you read it in writing, and there was so much into it that all of it was so good that you couldn't pick out one thing.
Yeah, and in fact,
that's
it was initially panned
as
being too short.
Yeah. And that's how I felt listening to him on this, because he's a steel magnolia. He walks softly, but man, he is made of iron.
Yeah.
You know, he is one tough man, and that he would slap. I mean, I felt like he very gentlemanly, very cordially slapped down everybody.
Yeah.
He slapped us down for sleeping on the job. He slapped down Bush, which I loved.
Oh, you should have seen the look on his face.
Oh,
I was sitting close enough to George Bush to see a twitch on his you know, I mean, he's
he
just
slunk out of town.
Pardon?
He basically slunk out of town.
Yeah.
They went to Anders and they took off and no, you know, not just like goodbye, they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I also felt like he slapped down everybody who thought they had a preconception of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he stood right up there and immediately said Christians and Muslims and talked about reaching out and how everybody had a right, to me he's saying, Israel, watch out. I may not be who you think I am.
Mm.
You know? And I always get that sense from his speeches because you got to read.
Or it might have even been Saudi Arabia. Look out! You're not who I think I am.
Yeah, and that I don't care. And he basically was saying, I don't care who you are. If you reach out your hand and unclench your fist and reach out your hand, we will take it and we will help you.
Right, which is the exact opposite of what George Bush said. What George Bush said was, you must repent, you must change your behavior, you must become like us, and then we'll talk to you.
You just couldn't, you know. And there was also that element of FDR in there. And he was criticized, Joan Brooks particularly criticized him. Well, he gave us a call to arms, but he didn't give us our marching orders and tell us what we have to do. Well, he doesn't know yet.
Well, and in a very real way, it's our job to give him his marching orders.
Yeah. You know, that the people have to lead him. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think he could have made that any clearer. But I think that the longer it goes on, and Ellen Fitzpatrick made the point. She was wonderful. She said, this speech is going to change as history changes.
Yeah.
Because it will be written in history. And what happens and what he does will define how we look through the ages at this speech.
Yeah, very well
said. So, It is just remarkable, totally remarkable.
I agree. Mary Lou, thank you very much. I appreciate your call and your kind sentiments. Jamie in New Hampshire. Jamie, you're on the air.
Tom, nice talking to you.
Thank you for calling.
I had a couple of points. The primary one is, boy, I am absolutely delighted. I was raised by conservatives.
You and 5 billion other people. Pardon me.
I was raised by a conservative, bigoted, Harvard graduate Republican, and I dealt with prejudice through the Army and through a lot of my life, and it always bothered me. This is a turnaround that's going to make a point all the way around the world. It's going to make a point, and it's an important one. My other thing was, I won the criminal activity of Cheney and Bush and everything, yes. But there's a financial responsibility, too. They have broke me.
Yeah.
And I would love to see, and it's probably not even possible, the largest class action suit ever brought by anybody in the world. And I want these guys to give me my money back. They made billions. Their friends made billions. I would love to see, is this even conceivable? And, of course, it's down further. But O.J. Simpson was found not guilty in a criminal trial. He was found guilty in a civil suit.
Right.
I just, how far can we take this? Is there any way to recoup our financial losses that this country, people like me and all over, have had to endure?
It's a good question to put to somebody who does that kind of litigation for a living, the kind of class action lawsuit stuff. I personally don't know, but the idea, and I appreciate your calling, Jamie, and putting it forward, of a class action lawsuit for, Henry Paulson and Dick Cheney. And I mean, Cheney, look at Halliburton was almost bankrupt in 2000 when Bush and Cheney came into office. Almost bankrupt. And, now they're worth billions, and as are many of their investors. And Paulson and his buddies and all the bankers, and let's do a lawsuit. Let's do a class action lawsuit. Let's take names and take our money back. Take our money back. Stephanie, our next call. Oh, John in Washington. Thank you. John, you're on the air.
Hi. I've just wanted to comment on President Obama's speech. And I think the one word that encapsulates it is responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Personal responsibility, responsibility for your neighborhood, your community, your state, the nation, and the planet. And it's a polar opposite of Bush. And I think what his message was is he's going to, and we need to take responsibility and also hold people responsible. And I think that's the message.
And what you get from reading his book, his autobiographical book, Dreams of My Father, is that that's how his mother raised him.
Right.
That was a really important part of his upbringing.
And that's I don't think we will ever see President Obama spend his time rationalizing his behavior in office.
Yeah.
I don't think that's in him.
Yeah.
As we have seen George Bush doing for the last month and a half.
Well, it's going to be really interesting, too, to see how quickly to a screeching halt comes the George Bush Memorial Reclaim Legacy and general, nonsense tour.
I just hope that President Obama does not do what President Clinton did and let criminals off the hook in the form of reaching across the aisle.
Yeah, when Clinton decided
that does not happen.
Yeah, I hope he is not operating under the illusion. Frankly, I think that Bill Clinton thought that if he dropped the Iran-Contra investigations, if he was nice to the Republicans, that they would be nice to him.
It's just not going to be a fact.
No, it never was, will be.
It never will be. They have a track record, and there's only one thing they respect, and you know it, and I know it. But I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, John. I appreciate the call. This is responsibility is a perfect word. I mean, John really identified that well, and it was the sense that I got listening to the speech. I was multitasking because I wanted to hear the words and get a sense of what this man is saying, who he is, and what he's about. It was actually rather striking as Barack Obama walked up through the members, the assembled members of Congress and the Supreme Court. He's not that tall a guy. He didn't, you know, like stand above the crowd. You kind of think of him as larger than life. And they were all just standing there like a bunch of people, you know, a bunch of men and women who, and he walked in a couple of times. I couldn't see him, you know, as just because I'm at the same level. And you know, he would just, actually, maybe I'm about 3 feet taller than they were. And, I mean, you know, the platform is about 3 feet up. But just, you know, I wanted to get the sense of this, of his, as a person, but also hear what he had to say. And also, it was fascinating to watch the expressions on George Bush's face. Oh, my, this breaking news. Ted Kennedy collapses at a congressional luncheon for President Barack Obama. More on that as time goes on, as we learn more. Thank you, Lovisa, for that. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
A big name in anti-aging right now is Dr. Arthur Perry. He's been all over TV. He's heard on radio. He has a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue. Here's the twist, though. Dr. Perry is a plastic surgeon, but he likes to have his patients try a cream called Night Skin before they go schedule their procedures. Night Skin goes on while you sleep. It supports natural collagen and elastin production. So when you use Night Skin, it reduces the appearance of your fine lines. It makes your skin smoother. It even fades away those unwanted brown spots that come with age. Dr. Perry says many of his patients call off their procedure appointments after using Night Skin because they're that happy with the results they see in the mirror. Now Dr. Perry's Night Skin is available for anyone to get risk-free. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003. Call right away for your risk-free trial of the Night Skin Anti-Aging Cream. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
Most of us don't like medical exams. So if you're a healthy person who's put off getting term life insurance, now hear this. Because you can get up to $500,000 in term life insurance with no doctor visit and no medical exam within minutes just by answering a few health questions over the phone. For a free quote, call eFinancial at 1-800-619-9011. Many people put off getting life insurance because they don't like medical exams. But it's possible to answer a few simple health questions and receive term life from top-rated carriers in minutes and for less than you'd imagine. Everyone's situation is different, but you could qualify for $500,000 of term life with no medical exam, and it's affordable. You could even be covered today. If you're living without term life, do what's right for your family in minutes, right over the phone. Call now for your free quote. Call 1-800-619-9011. 1-800-619-9011.
Hi, Tom Dwyer Automotive Services is your ally in a bad economy. We'll make sure you're not wasting your money or unknowingly running your vehicle into the ground. We provide value by offering quality service in a logical, prioritized manner, focusing on safety recommendations first, breakdown items next, and then your maintenance needs. Trust is the main reason people use our service. Our clients know we deliver comprehensive, honest, no BS service. We won't sell unneeded or random nonsense. Our service advisors aren't paid sales commission, so you can trust they're recommending services you need, not just building a paycheck. We're an ASE Blue Seal of Excellence facility, and our technicians efficiently service your vehicle right the first time. We offer a no-hassle 18-month, 18,000-mile warranty, free shuttle service, and in this economy, our same as cash financing can help. Let our existing clients tell you why they choose us. Go to our website at tomdwyer.com and watch the detailed client testimonials. And call us at 503-230-2300. Please let us help you preserve your car and your cash.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
If you'd like to join me, please do.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber.
Saying the nation must choose hope over fear, unity of purpose over conflict and discord. You get that? This is such an extraordinary thing that we have had 8 years. You know, George Bush came in and said, I'm a uniter, not a divider. And, you know, we all had a sense that he was a bit of a hustler to begin with. But it wasn't, frankly, it wasn't just Bush. I mean, Reagan did the same thing. Bush's father did the same thing. It's been a long time since we've had a president who has talked about hope over fear, about fear not being the thing that should be front and center in our lives. I mean, that has been the essence of the Bush administration.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
And Cheney, I mean, he's the original fear-monger. The original fear merchant. Unity of purpose over conflict and discord. He says, our time of standing pat. This is from Barack Obama's talk today, his inaugural address. He says, our time of standing pat of protecting narrow interests. Just think about that for a minute. And I'm sitting here watching George. It was amazing how many times the look on Bush's face was like he'd been pinched or slapped. Our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests, and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. And that was one of those moments when, you know, looking over at Bush and the Republicans around him, and you could just see that they were just not happy. Not happy campers at all. He said, starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin the work of remaking America. Then, speaking to the world, he said, to the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward based on mutual interest and mutual respect. Contrast that with George Bush talking about how we were going to wage a crusade with all the right-wing crazies running around on cable TV for years, the first couple of years of the Bush administration. Ah, so radical Islam is a jihad. They've declared a war against us. We've got to declare a war against them. We've got to take the fight to the terrorists. And the reality of it is that The largest estimate that the CIA had ever come up with of the number of people who had just been through bin Laden's training camps, which was not, you know, all the hardcore folks. I mean, some of them were just, you know, not ideologues. They were kids who wanted to, you know, well, whatever. I don't want to diminish it. But it was 20,000 people. 20,000 people was the maximum number.
that bin Laden had by his side. And had we treated him like a criminal and an insane person, the way that Bill Clinton treated Tim McVeigh, he would still probably only have 20,000 people in the whole world who gave a damn about him. But instead, George Bush decided that fear and terror was the way to go, that war was the way to go, that he wanted to be the classic model from fiction, that the anti-hero defines the hero, that the hero can only be as good as the bad guy. The good guy can only be as good as the bad guy is bad. If you don't have a Penguin or a Riddler, you don't have a Batman. Nobody cares. If you don't have Lex Luthor, Superman is boring. Oh, look at that. He stopped a convenience store robbery. Look at that. He stopped a bank robbery. So what? The hero is only interesting and really only a hero when he faces a villain who is larger than life. And George Bush turned bin Laden into that larger than life villain for the first couple of years. And then when he was no longer useful as that, because he couldn't catch him, he couldn't become the hero over him, he essentially discarded him. In one of his last interviews, do you know where bin Laden is? You know, he said, yeah, I don't know. I don't care. I don't care. Twice he said it. So Barack Obama says, to the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward based on mutual interest and mutual respect. As he was sworn in as Barack Hussein Obama. I think, you know, one of the extraordinary things about this is that, you know, right-wingers have been criticized for calling him that, for using his full name that way. But won't it be an extraordinary thing? Won't it be a wonderful time when the name Hussein is just as normal in America, is just as devoid of emotional charge, or maybe even as considered good as the name John or Jack, as in Kennedy, or George? Well, let's not go there. But you get my point. He said, to those who cling to power through corruption and deceit and the silencing of dissent, as George Bush was sitting about 15, 20 feet behind him, gritting his teeth, he says, know that you are on the wrong side of history. But we will extend a hand if you are willing to unclench your fist. This has got to be one of the best inaugural addresses that has ever been given. We'll be back tomorrow, broadcasting live from the nation's capital, from Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for being with us today. And don't forget, none of this is going to happen without you. We've got to get active. We've got to participate. Democracy begins with us. It begins with you. And if we're going to make, if Barack Obama is going to do well, it's only going to be because we're there and we're pushing. Tag, you're it. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.